section86.com. We're changing the world of podcasting one show at a time.
86 Productions.
Mark, the best podcast providing the most in-depth insight and analysis into the world of professional wrestling. On today's show, we have Aaron, Roger, and Doug to join Andrew as we discuss this month's view from the turnbuckle. Aaron, let's talk about Death Watch on TNA. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so TNA, as we had reported last month, has been in a little bit of some financial trouble as of late, and they actually had a lawsuit filed against them from Billy Corgan, who had been the on-screen manager or GM role as of late. And he wanted to take control of the company. And unfortunately, he lost his injunction so that way they would stop any type of business operations. But, you know, it could be a potential where he just wanted to show how badly TNA was in debt so that way it might scare off potential buyers or investors. But I think the biggest thing here is that TNA is in dire straits. And so, Doug, I want to ask you, over under January 15th, 2017, will they be in business? Do you have the over or the under?
I think because of courts and whatnot and all stuff like that, I'm going to take the over just because of legality aspects. I think they'll make it to January, but not much more after that.
And Roger, what do you think?
I agree with Doug on this one. If it wasn't for all the court situation, I wouldn't be against saying the under, but nothing's going to happen immediately with them tied up in a lawsuit and all of their debts. And the thing is, haven't we seen this before? Isn't this how WCW died? Like, this is the blueprint of what we witnessed back in 2001, and TNA's done the same thing. You know, so they lost all their talent.
So based on what you guys are saying, though, you guys believe that 2017, TNA will not be around at the end of the year?
Not by the end of the year of 2017, no.
Not what about the current form that it is.
What I think is really going to happen is that TNA, at the end of December, TNA itself is done. But I believe that, I think it's Aerolux and whatever the other, they own the Fight app, whatever it is, or the Fight Network. I believe that they're going to take over, but they're just going to start fresh. Because they probably want to just get the Pop TV deals, what I'm assuming. But they also said they're only going to tape 3 or 4 times a year. So they're going to tape 52 episodes, you know, in basically, we'll say 4 segments. Those wrestlers are going to be exhausted.
Not only that, you can't do that. Like, that just doesn't logically work. You can't tape 15-plus episodes in one sitting and then try to run those stories all the way out.
Well, I mean, if you did, let's say, 9 shows in a row, I mean, you could potentially do 2, you know, a matinee and then an evening. But then at some point, everyone knows what's going to happen, so they'll say, here are the spoilers. Well, if they're complaining about the spoiler, well, I guess they're not going to be around. Dixie will be gone. But realistically, I think it's a dumb move. But I think they're going to what they're going to do is they're going to sell the tape library to WWE, and they're going to take that money to pay off every single debt that they own and then start 100% fresh. So then Impact Ventures or whatever is going to be gone. That's what I think is going to happen.
So, Aaron and Doug and Andy, this is my question for you. What is Impact Wrestling worth if WWE owns the tape library?
I don't believe they won't be worth much because, you know, it's going to be about the talent at that point in time. And obviously the, you know, the camera lighting and all that other, the actual hard material there. Once they get rid of the tape library, which is all that WWE wants, you know, they only would theoretically take like 2 or 3 people who are currently in TNA and put them in NXT. There's no mainstay that's there that they'd be like, oh yeah, we totally need you guys right away. The Hardys will probably end up in WWE. So like, you know, they're not going to pick them. I would definitely guess EC3, like we've said before, but other than that, there's not really a whole lot of people that they would go, oh, you know, TNA made that person a Ring of Honor, made him, and TNA made him better. We definitely have to have this person. You know, it's not AJ Styles. It's not, you know, anyone of that caliber that they would be taking, I don't believe.
I could see them falling in love with Lashley just because he is big and he has the size.
Yeah, but I consider him more of a WWE guy. I mean, that's what he
does. I do,
was,
yeah. You know? True.
But so yeah, other than EC3, I don't see anybody.
I like the Wolves. I think the Wolves will come around, and I think some of the X Division guys will come over because I do believe that that WWE will actually have a second show on Wednesday nights where it's going to be the Cruiserweight Classic. and they're going to continue to do it. And then technically they'll only have the tournament maybe once a year, but they'll still have the matches because realistically, I'm sorry, but those 10 episodes were awesome. Hands down, awesome. So, and I would like to see those guys be brought. I mean, like, they brought a lot of people in. Why not continue that? And if the plan is to continue to do that, I think that's a win for us. And then you can bring guys from TNA and put them in WWE. So,
but there's not many though. That's the thing.
Like maybe I'm thinking off the top of my head, maybe three. You know, I mean, I know I want the Wolves. I know I want EC3. I know I want Decay. I want all of them to come over. But yeah, I think that's. It's also, are they going to be able to take the wrestlers, or are they going to be able to take the trademarks as well? Because if that's the case, then that's going to change things. Because then TNA might be worth a little bit more. And I'm saying
WWE, I don't think they want the trademarks, because I think they want their own branded superstars. Like, if EC3 comes over, he won't be EC3. He will be whatever WWE creates. The Hardys are probably the only ones who would stay because their brand is recognizable instantly pretty much across the world. Like, so they're not going to change them because they're WWE. But like, EC3 would not be EC3, in my opinion, in WWE. He would be, like I said, probably Ethan Kennedy. They'd probably just redo the story.
Oh, with Mr. Kennedy.
Well, the Vince question would be,
yeah, I was going to say the Vince storyline, Vince's son and whatnot, or Vince, yeah. You know, his little, I don't want to say.
Nephew?
Maybe his maybe, love yeah, child or nephew. Something.
Yeah, I was going to say love child instead of the B word, but. But my other question though is, does WWE have to completely buy out TNA in order to get the tape library, as in it's you buy everything and in order to get the tape library, or you don't get anything? Because that's how I would sell it to WWE. You have to buy everything in order to get the tape library just to get a few more dollars.
I don't know if TNA has that kind of negotiating strength to really.
I don't think they do either, but that's what I would be trying to do.
I mean, I do agree with you fundamentally. I just think WWE could look at you and be like, listen, your company is in debt. Like, you'll take what we give you, or we'll just walk away and continue making money hand over fist.
Right. And so it also depends on AJ Styles, because what if AJ Styles continues to go up and up and up, and he has the potential of main event WrestleMania? Then I believe the TNA tape library is worth something. Because they're going to want to put out DVDs of AJ Styles. They're going to do whatever they can. And the thing is, it's because of AJ Styles. So AJ Styles, you know, created TNA, and he's going to be the one who kills it, too.
They can obviously TJ Perkins, too.
And TJP, you know, Manic and Suicide. I think that you can have... Dude, yeah, Samoa Joe. I think you can have a... I'm going to smack myself later. Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian. Like them, you could have a best of those guys as well as a tag team, because I think they do a great job. I can't think that there's a one guy who is really young, Amazing Red. You could have a best of him as well.
Well, but they would do more the people that they currently have, or they would complete collections. So like Sting, you know, for the most part, they own everything of Sting's except for his TNA stuff. You know, Jeff Hardy, obviously very similar. AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, you know, the normal ones there. But
Kurt Angle, I think, would be another
Kurt
one.
Angle,
it depends on how much are those DVDs going to make you, or is the money going to make you back? So I realistically think that TNA might be worth around $5 or $6 million, and that's for everything.
Yeah, probably.
Wow.
All right, so since we're done with TNA, because there's really nothing else to talk about them, let's talk about Raw. Still brand split, still going on, and I think they're doing a good job of it so far. Raw, three Hell in the Cell matches. I don't know about you, Aaron, but were you exhausted after the final one?
And everybody's said this before, theme pay-per-views I don't feel work very well. I am going to be the exception where I actually like the TLC pay-per-view, because you have a tables match, a ladders match, a chairs match. You know, it's basically extreme rules. You know, every match is extreme. That's kind of a fun novelty. But the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, when you have three Hell in a Cell matches, you know, Daniel Bryan was the one that blasted them for it. Why not have six, you know? There's no need for it, because none of them were really even feud enders, you know? Roman and Rusev are still probably going to have some sort of clashing there. Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins are still clashing. And then we have, you know, Sasha Banks and Charlotte are probably not over. It doesn't seem like they're going to be over, even though Sasha wasn't at Raw this past week because she was nursing some injuries. But I don't know. I felt like having three was just way too much.
I mean, I could deal with two, possibly. Like, if there's one at the very beginning and then one at the end, I'm okay with that. But to have three of them, I mean... And you know, with the women's match, you know, being the main event, I actually would prefer that not to be in Hell in a Cell. I would have actually had, I would have loved to seen it up, but.
Well, I don't feel like you needed a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. I think that because you're doing a brand split, this is a perfect opportunity to call it something else and then happen to have a Hell in a Cell match. You know, one, maybe even two at most, but like, you don't need a Hell in a Cell match. This, it didn't add, none of the matches other than the women's match, which we'll talk about in depth here in a moment, other than the women's match, the other two did not really add anything to it. It just happened inside the cell.
But I wanted a big bump too. I think if you're in Hell in the Cell, you have to have some bump. And there was not that bump in I think any of these matches. I think they were just cage matches, basically. There was no Hell in a Cell. I mean, if they want to make it Hell in a Cell, it should be Inferno.
In the women's match, I think they tried, but it didn't come off as big as it was supposed to. To have three in one night, again, I'll echo your guys' sentiments, is it was overdone. And the only time I think you needed to do it was for the women's match. And just because it was the first women's match, it becomes a big thing. You have that reason to have a Hell in a Cell match is because it's a women's match. The other two, by the time we got to it, there's nothing else we were going to really see, was there?
Yeah, because so, they couldn't hurt the cage.
So Hell in a Cell, right? It debuted in 97, about 20 years ago. We're close to 2017. I remember Michael Cole at one point said something like, this is the 34th Hell in a Cell. And I think that was when the night started. So we had 36 matches in 20 years. How is that match still special if you've done 36 in 20 years? Like, not all of these have been blood feuds. Rusev Reigns actually made sense. Sasha Charlotte made sense for the history making and the fact that it's the first time the women have been there. Why were Rollins and Owens in the Hell in a Cell when it couldn't even keep out Jericho? Like, what was the point of a cage match that didn't actually keep away the interference? That could have just been a normal no disqualification match or a street fight or any other match, but putting that in Hell in a Cell was stupid. And why are you doing three in a pay-per-view? It takes away the value when you do so many of these in the same pay-per-view. Like, by the third one, I'm just like, can we just be done? Which is a shame to the ladies, but... You can't do three Iron Man matches and expect me to be entertained by the 90th minute. You can't do three ladder matches and think I'm going to care all that much. I hate it when they used to do Double Money in the Bank. It's a once-a-year thing. Make it special. Don't overdo it and saturate it with two and three and four. It's like, yeah, the match doesn't have any value to me. Like, they try to build it up as this, oh, it's Hell in a Cell. Like, I see it every year six times. Like, who cares?
Well, that's the other thing, too, is that this pay-per-view went way too long. I mean, the girls started to come out. I think it was about... 9:40 central time. So, and then the pay-per-view ended at like 10:15. So they had all that time. So they got 35 minutes curtain to curtain, but that's what they gave them. And I thought the whole match with basically Sasha getting hurt and then they stretch her out. I think that's been done way too many times.
And to thing. Yeah.
That didn't add anything to the match. Actually, I think it took away from it.
Well, and they're forgetting too, 6 months ago, we saw Undertaker take on Shane McMahon in Hell in a Cell. So this is the we've had four Hell in a Cell matches this year, which is the most we've ever had in a year. And, you know, there was nothing that was going to happen. I agree with Doug and you guys, Charlotte and Sasha Banks as the final one and also as Hell in a Cell, I was okay with. I'm totally fine with that. I think that was definitely match of the night. But the other two, nothing of value happened in those feuds. Nothing of value happened. And they really need to reevaluate what Hell in a Cell really means, because if Hell in a Cell is a feud ender, then these all three should be done and they shouldn't go any further, you know? And it doesn't feel like that, you know? So what are you going to do? What's going to end the Kevin Owens Seth Rollins feud? Are they going to all of a sudden do an Iron Man match or an Extreme Rules in the ladder with, you know, a Hell in a Cell on top of it type match? Or... my favorite, triple tier cage.
I was waiting for that.
I was too.
Now let's get in. Okay, so Kevin Owens retains. All right, what really happened? What extent makes this match, I guess, good? Like, as in, what was the payoff? What do you think, Doug?
I'm going to say that this was my match of the night. And I hate kind of taking away from the women's match because it was good. It was, but there was enough botches, I think, in that match that it really made this one. I mean, this one was spectacular. Seth Rollins actually showed a lot of strength in this one when he powerbombed Kevin Owens after nearly dropping Kevin Owens, picked him back up, threw him over the top rope into two tables. I think that was spot of the night, but I think it was well done in the aspect of two. Yeah, you had Kevin Owens do some shenanigans that got on accident, and it was a very well wrestled match up until that point. And then you kind of got a little comic-y, I think, with the extinguisher, and then you had Jericho come in, and yeah, everything was legal. So that should end the feud. Everything was legal. He doesn't get a rematch. There's no rematch. We played by the rules, and I won, or being Kevin Owens. So it should be an ending of the feud, but it's not going to be because these are your two probably biggest names in face and heel right now on Raw. So you know that's going to pick up later. But that was my match of the night. I appreciated the match. It just didn't need to be Hell in a Cell. It could have been a no disqualification match and left at that.
One thing to speak to kind of what Aaron talked about is that if you remember, you know, we were all at WrestleMania 32 and Hell in a Cell was a big match. Like, it was featured as a big time match. It was a punishment for Shane McMahon. We saw a massive spot. Like, it was memorable. Besides that spot with Owens and Rollins, which didn't necessarily add to anything because it was in the cage, like, he propped it up against the wall, but you could have done that powerbomb outside the ring through the table. None of them really felt like Hell in a Cell was necessary. And if it's not a feud ender, it's not a blood feud. This is my issue I had with Owen Zane. You're just doing gimmick matches for the sake of gimmick matches. Whereas, look at NXT. When they did a cage match between Balor and Joe, it was the end. Literally, it was NXT the end. Or when you had Bayley and Sasha, it was the Iron Woman match. And it was the end of the feud. Like, there needs to be a cutoff point where, like Doug said, you lost twice. It's over. But now they're both captains in Survivor Series, and you're just like, this. You know who's going to win the Rumble, in my opinion. I think it's pretty obvious at this point.
Oh,
who? Roman Reigns?
No, it won't be Roman Reigns. I think he's staying away from the title. I think it's Seth Rollins by far.
Yeah,
I think he's a pretty easy choice.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. I will. It's almost like they're like gearing up for it. that this is what's going to happen. But
I don't know about that because I think that we're going to have Rollins versus Triple H at WrestleMania. So I don't think that Rollins wins.
Yeah, but Triple H has not got a rematch though.
I think that Triple H, Hunter is Roadblock or Fastlane or, you know, like that is the match that Hunter says that, like, you won't make it to Mania.
But the thing is, though, Triple H does not wrestle any other time other than WrestleMania. That's the only thing.
He wrestled last year. Roadblock.
Yeah, he wrestled Dean Ambrose for the chance to get
that. That's right, he did wrestle Dean Ambrose.
And he defended against Ziggler on Raw.
Well, but he had the title at the time, though. So I think that's true. That'd be the minor exception.
Yeah, so he'll get the title at Rumble again.
Because he's got to be a 14, 15-time champion. He's got to be close to John Cena.
Well, remember, like Daniel Bryan said, right? You do all the 6-elimination Hell in a Cell matches, then you have Triple H come in and pedigree the guy and give a hand in the title. Daniel Bryan, no chill, and I love it.
Yeah. No. So the other thing that happened, we had Roman retain over Ruru. I think the biggest problem with this match in particular is that Rusev put him in the accolade, and then he put that chain over his mouth, which was a really cool visual. And I think that's one of those spots that they did. They're like, oh, this is going to be amazing. And it looked good. But how many people have we seen power out of the accolade where it's not important anymore? Like when John Cena did it, I think it was at WrestleMania 31, it was like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. And then Roman Reigns has done that multiple times now. In fact, multiple times within the last month or so, he's powered out of the accolade. And you're telling me that he's putting this chain in his mouth too? And so at this point in time, and this has always been my criticism of Roman Reigns, is that he is too strong. He is too powerful. He is hitting not just Super Cena, but Super Hogan territory is what it feels like to me. You know, other than when he was demoted for, you know, failing his drug test, which if you take that part out of the equation, he has been, you know, so protected, and he's gotten big wins over people that realistically he probably shouldn't have. And I think that this is, you know, an example of Roman Reigns being overprotected here.
Doug, so what do you think about how Roman Reigns treats the U.S. title?
I absolutely hate it. You give him a title that I don't even think he deserves. I think that could have made, I mean, it made WWE sense, and that's why I predicted that when we get to the predictums, or predictions, I should say. But when I saw it on Raw, and he just throws it over his back like it's any other T-shirt or anything like that, absolutely disrespecting the title and everything, carries it down there and just has the schmuck look on him. I'm so glad everybody was booing him and telling him he sucks. But kudos to Mick Foley for picking the belt off of his back, putting it on his shoulder where it properly should be, or either on the shoulder, displaying it to everybody, or around your waist. The only two places it should be. And thank God Mick did that, and right in front of him. Very, very happy about that.
Ah, oh, I love the crowds when they do that. It's so awesome. But anyways, Aaron, do we want to move to the cruiserweights?
Well, I don't think we spent enough time on the women, though. That's the okay, one okay. thing I actually kind of want to talk a little bit about them. Roger, you got to see the women's Hell in a Cell match. Well, first things first, was that your match of the night, or did you like the other one? Any of the other ones better?
I liked Owens Rollins better. Despite the fact that it had no business being in Hell in a Cell, it was a well-worked standard singles match. Until the Jericho part, like that sequence between Owens and Rollins was absolutely phenomenal. I really enjoyed the powerbomb to the outside spot. You know, they did a good job of working in Rollins' back. They hit all their spots. The only kind of botch didn't even really look like a botch because his back was so hurt that it makes sense that he couldn't actually jack Owens up immediately. So it really worked into the context of the story. I don't know. I mean, how many times have we seen Sasha Charlotte now? Is this match 4 or match 5? In like
we've seen it
months?
A lot.
I mean, just, you know, when you have a shallow division like Raw, where you have basically 3 legitimate contenders, you're overexposing these matches. Whereas like SmackDown, Becky, Alexa, I think we've seen it once. I'm still interested in seeing that match. Whereas like, and I like Charlotte and Sasha, but, you know, it's kind of like the Usos club. I've seen enough. You know, New Day and club, I've seen enough. Like, go away. Feud with other people, but they also need a deeper division. Like, Nia Jax basically needs to come up and be the second heel because Dana Brooke is not good. She's just not acceptable. I mean, she's not, right? You know, Nia Jax is actually being built as a monster and looks like somebody who could step into the ring and be intimidating. Dana Brooke is a Barbie bodybuilder. Like, she's average in the ring. She's an okay personality, but no one's ever said Dana Brooke 4-star match. Never have, probably never will.
And you know what the thing is? I thought that, I think it was last week when she wrestled Bayley. Or no, it was on the pay-per-view when she wrestled Bayley. I thought that she was carrying Bayley was carrying her the entire time. Like, okay, this is what you're gonna do now, hun. Like, that's how that match felt to me. Oh well.
Did you guys think? And Andy, let me ask you first: the significance of not only the women actually main eventing a major pay per view, but also it being in a Hell in a Cell. Did that feel significant to you, or was it more like, well, they deserved it anyway, so you know.
I think that you could have built it up to a Hell in a Cell match later on, but I don't. But I like the fact that they main evented a pay per view because that has not happened. They were not the last people to go out there, or the last wrestlers to go through the curtain. But you know, I'm really happy that they did it. But I just wish it was not in the Hell in a Cell. I wish they would have added that later. But that's my.
Let me say that. I, as a general rule, am a fan of the idea of mixing it up, having tag team titles, main event, having women's championship match, main event. This was probably the wrong one to have main event, though, because it didn't feel special. Like, when they did it in NXT, and it was Sasha versus Bayley, it felt special. It felt like the type of match that you would order an entire card to watch. Bayley, Asuka, too. It felt special. Sasha Charlotte didn't feel special. It felt like just another match inside of a cage. This isn't a blood feud. Like, Sasha's beat her twice. Charlotte's beat her on SummerSlam. Other than that, like this was – I understand what they were going for, but I think this was the wrong time to pull that trigger. I'm not necessarily unhappy with it. I just think they could have done a better job building up this type of feud so that when they got their chance to main event, it was a much better match.
Roger, would you say to – you know, let's say in hindsight being 2020, let's say this was like their – second or third match or third and final match, let's say that they, you know, they've done other pay-per-views, you know, they've been kept apart on Raw, And this is also the only Hell in a Cell match, or one of two instead of one of three. Would that make it feel more special, and would that be worthy of a main event?
Absolutely, because that's the whole point, is that the match isn't overexposed. When we saw Bayley Asuka, it was number two. When we saw Sasha Bayley, it was the second one where they were both at the elite level status. This match we've seen now five times within the last 2 months. At a certain point, you know, it's like how many times? And the other problem is that we've seen this with everything across Raw. Rollins Owens has faced off each other like 10 times. Sheamus and Cesaro faced off like 8 times. Reigns and Rusev faced off an ungodly amount of times. You know, after a while, you just get bored watching the same match over and over and over again. And this seems to be the booking with Raw. They do the same match 15 times before they move on to another feud.
Do you think that if Ward was writing Raw, he could make it better? Or is it too far gone?
I think a 3-hour show is hard to do. Like, Aaron's brought this up repeatedly, and it's true. That's really hard to make a non-pay-per-view 3-hour show entertaining without having 5 to 6 captivating feuds. And even though I think Ryan Ward is good, I mean, obviously NXT was fantastic with an hour and SmackDown was 2 hours, I don't think Raw has the depth or the type of rosters, like with the divisions being so thin, that 3 hours will never be entertaining. SmackDown works because it's 2 hours. I don't have to see Becky Lynch versus, Alexa Bliss every single week. I don't have to see Nikki versus Carmella every single week. There's some fresh matches. There's fresh feuds. Things draw out. Miz versus Ziggler, I was never bored by that, even though they wrestled 3 times, because each time it made sense. It built upon the story. Charlotte Sasha was like, oh, okay, so Sasha gets a random title shot because she's Sasha Banks, and then Charlotte gets her rematch, and then they get a triple threat, and then, okay, she gets another rematch on Raw. Okay, now Charlotte gets a rematch. It's like, why are we doing so many matches?
Yeah, I think they could have skipped a couple weeks of doing, like, basically wrestling a match, because why not save it for the pay-per-view? They could have been talking the entire time. They could have had the signing, as I like to say. But, yeah, I think it's too much. But let's move on to the cruiserweights that were on Raw. So we had TJP versus the Brian Kendrick. Now, Doug, what were your thoughts on this match?
The pay-per-view match actually was, and I hate to say it too, because I like both of these guys. They're the only ones that have any kind of build-up whatsoever in the cruiserweight division. But I was with the crowd. I was falling asleep. The pay-per-view match itself just seemed slow and drawn out. There was no big spots. There was no big... The storytelling was just boring. They did a better job in like the 10 minutes that they had on the rematch that everybody knew was going to happen on Raw, because why even watch a pay-per-view when you watch all the rematches on Raw the next night? But the rematch itself was more entertaining in the 10 minutes that it happened and told a better story of than anything else that they've done in the cruiserweight division. I think that this was a wake-up call, that pay-per-view match was a wake-up call that the cruiserweight division is not doing what the classic did for the title. And hopefully we'll see a lot more of even that 10 minutes and start building up other storylines or other people in the cruiserweight division. The other matches, the match that they had even on the pre-show was a good match, but just no one's going to get behind it because they don't know any of these people whatsoever.
Do you think it's time to actually just pull the plug on the cruiserweights, though, and just give them their own show?
I don't know if it needs its own show. I think the issue was, and I was thinking about this as I was watching the pay-per-view, the Cruiserweight Classic was great because everybody was on equal footing coming in. We had obviously favorites, Ibushi and Zack Sabre Jr. and guys like that, but for the most part, everybody was even. Coming out of the tournament, TJP beat the other 31 guys. So why is he wrestling Brian Kendrick and all of the other guys who he's already beaten, when in reality, what he should have done has been established himself against guys like Neville, Kalisto, Sin Cara, the guys who are already on Raw and say, okay, good job, kid. Now it's time to step up to the big boy plate. Because right now, all you're doing is wrestling the guys you already beat just on Raw. So wrestle the guys who've made it. You know, and Neville's a former NXT champion. He's got credentials. Finn Balor now is a former Universal champion. You could have done a one-on-one match with those two if Finn wasn't hurt. You know, you have something to work with if you use guys like Kalisto. But doing Brian Kendrick over and over again, it's like, well, you already got beat by Ibushi, who TJP tapped out. Why are you getting 3 matches for the titles? I don't know. I just feel like they could have done this division, quote unquote, a lot better than just rehashing matches that were better on the CWC anyway.
I'm upset that they actually had him tap. I thought that he was going to do something where I don't know, like he just refuses the tap and then he just passes out or something like that from the pain.
I've always been okay with someone tapping every now and then. I feel, you know, one of the things in WCW, especially with their cruiserweights, is that they would tap. You know, the faces would tap, the heels would tap. And I never had an issue with that because it just said, like, look, they tried as hard as they could and it just got to a point they had to give up. And, unlike a John Cena, who obviously in his contract, I'm sure Undertaker, same thing, you know, they never tap.
Undertaker's tapped out.
He has, but like, and Cena has too, but you know.
Has Cena tapped out?
He has, but like, you know, and not Super Cena. Super Cena never has, but.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
He tapped out to the ankle lock at Cleveland's. But the biggest thing I think here with the cruiserweights is I feel that they have been dumbed down to a WWE style. And it's not the Cruiserweight Classic style that we were used to seeing, because I feel like they were doing a lot of really crazy stuff there and they toned it down for Raw. I feel like they've toned it down a lot. And there's not a bad side to that. But then people are probably watching this going, well, why are these people special? What makes them unique? Why is this TJ Perkins guy who's 5'6" and, you know, he's OK, but what makes him cool? And he's not doing the moves that get him over. You know, and Brian Kendrick, and he's established, and obviously he's doing very heel moves, so he is able to be a heel very easily. TJ Perkins, who's the face, it can't be a face. He can't do the face moves in the same way Daniel Bryan did to get over, you know, or some of the other greats that are a little bit smaller. And I totally agree with what you said, Roger, about, you know, the who he's facing. He needs to face or he needed to face some other people. And they need to do that. They need to have some qualifying matches and very simple. Have Neville take on TJ. You know, Neville could come out and say, you know what? I want that cruiserweight title. TJ, you are the number one contender. I want to be the number one contender. Let's fight for it. You know, very easy. And then people are going to care about that title.
That is surprising that they would. But yeah, I think we all have good thoughts on it. But, you know, just to let everyone know, yes, TJP did tap out to the Brian Kendrick. I'm just sad because I thought TJP was going to get plates for him, for his belt, but he never did. So I wonder if Kendrick's going to get them. But
the last note on this, if WWE buys TNA, I think they would be very smart to turn Impact into a Cruiserweight / X Division show. That would solve multiple problems all at once.
1 hour. Just make it one hour.
Every single week.
Okay. I do agree with that. That can be done, and I think that can be done great. If we look at NXT, I mean, that's the Cruiserweight Classic. I completely agree. Aaron, your favorite wrestler of all time, Brock Lesnar, is going to be taking on Bill Goldberg, right?
So, it is kind of, I was very excited to see Goldberg back. And one of the things I noticed that Goldberg did that you don't really see very often is when he gave his very first promo, he was looking directly into the camera when he was talking to you. When he was coming out, he was actually shaking hands with fans. He was a face, and he was doing face, old school face stuff and getting over. And I really felt captivated by his promo. But the question I have here is that we crapped over this match 12 years ago, and I rewatched this match today. I sent a link in the in our little chat that we have, and I mean the match was not good. Are we expecting this 12 years later? Goldberg has not been wrestling. You know, are we expecting this to actually even be okay or even slightly better than what it was 12 years ago?
I wouldn't be surprised if it gets 2 stars. That's what
is that like. Better or worse?
That's probably,
I mean, legitimately, right?
That's probably better.
That should be what? Better.
It was probably like not even a star, like half a star.
Yeah,
it was a -5 stars. Yeah,
-5 stars.
So here's one of the questions I have: is that Goldberg is Goldberg because he has this myth of invincibility, this aura of being just an unstoppable beast? So how does the match? Exactly. How does the match play out? Does this become Brock Lesnar destroying an old washed-up Goldberg Roman Reigns style? Do they try to legitimately do an even wrestling match? Do you have Goldberg be the dominant one and a one-time performer looks better than your, you know, part-time pay-per-view ratings draw? Like, ignoring the fact that it probably won't be good because it wasn't good 12 years ago when they were younger, something about this has a bit of an issue because it doesn't make a lot of sense how they're going to get out of this. And because Goldberg's not going to come in and get squashed. I think we can all safely say he didn't sign a contract to say, I'm going to take 17 German suplexes, three F5s, and be tossed out of here. Like, he's going to get his stuff in. So how do they book this match?
Of every match that's happening, this is the one I don't know what to do. Because I actually think that Lesnar should go over, but then have a rematch at Royal Rumble. That's what I think they should do. They probably won't do it at Royal Rumble. They'll probably do it at WrestleMania. But... and also the match has to be good, because if it's not even gonna hit one star, then you can't have it, you know, headline like a WrestleMania. You have to have it. If this needs to be a great match, so I don't know who they're gonna work with, but maybe they should bring one of the SmackDown guys over to help them with the match.
How many great matches did Goldberg ever have in his career? I can think of Kim the DDP Hogan. One. Hogan and him was a moment. The match wasn't really that good. It was just an awesome moment. It was very true. Andre Hoganish.
No, the DDP Goldberg match.
Yeah, Hollywood had DDP.
That very one, good. That one probably four, maybe 4.25 stars, but not a five.
I really like that William Regal one, though.
Oh, the one where he just Goldberg didn't know what to do.
What?
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely like, I mean, it's the worst match I think I've ever seen almost.
What happened?
It's right up.
So Regal tells the story that he was supposed to go out there and work like a 6-minute match. And Goldberg, from the start, was confused. So everything they tried to do was botched. Hammerlock, Goldberg didn't know how to take it. Suplex, Goldberg didn't know how to take it. So, I mean, like, you're just watching it. And it is literally like the Jackie Gata match from 10 years ago where they just botched everything. That was Regal Goldberg. And it was like Goldberg blames Regal, says that he made him look bad. And I kind of trust Regal considering he's an in-ring tactician and very good. Goldberg didn't know what he was doing.
Right. he only had squash matches up until to when he faced Regal, and now they Roger said, I think it was supposed to be like a 10-minute match, and he couldn't do anything. He didn't know how to take anything. He didn't know how to do a bump or anything like that. And Regal just gets frustrated with him, and actually, I think he even starts really hitting Goldberg.
Yeah, he stiffed him.
Yeah, he stiffed him hard. But what I'm expecting out of this one, and how I kind of book it. And this is where I'm going to try to think in the minds of a WWE creative right now. I bet there's and this makes me worried. I think that they are getting so much hype and everything behind Goldberg that I'm worried that they're going to try to get him to do more than just one match. And one of the rumors that I saw was possibly Goldberg versus Undertaker at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that.
And when I heard Heyman talking about how Lesnar beat the streak and emphasizing the Undertaker aspect of it, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, Undertaker's music hits and it distracts Lesnar enough where Goldberg gets the spear, the jackhammer, and the win. And then Goldberg goes on to say, I beat the man who beat the streak. I can beat the man who had the streak. I don't necessarily want to see it, but if I was to book it, I think I'd book it that way. That way, Lesnar still looks strong because he was distracted in the loss, and he's still 0-2 against Goldberg. So now Goldberg has a new streak against Lesnar, and just leave it at that. Honestly, I would leave it at that. Goldberg leaves on top. Everybody's happy. Lesnar gets knocked down a few pegs because you still have him. I mean, he beat Super Cena, so... you need to bring Lesnar down a little bit because it's not reasonable for him to lose a match, I think, at this point in WWE, which makes it really, really hard to watch his matches, even though I am a Lesnar mark. But this match will be better than the last time because both of them are still contractually obligated to fight for WWE, whereas last time neither of them were going to be contractually obligated to wrestle for WWE. So it will be better. It's still not going to be a good match, though.
I can tell you right now what's going to happen. You're right, Doug. That will happen. He'll hit an F5. Goldberg will be out, and then you're going to hear the chime. And then he's going to get up and be like, what? And get all like weird out. The it's going to go black, and there'll be a lot of like flashing. Then Undertaker comes from underneath the ring and pulls Lesnar in. It's over. Then no one wins, no one loses. It's a draw. That's how they're going to end it.
Oh, really? You think they'll go that route?
I don't actually believe Undertaker interferes in this. Like, I think we settled that feud last year. I think Shane McMahon interferes.
That who?
You think who?
I think Shane McMahon interferes.
Really?
Because remember, Shane and Brock have beef from SummerSlam. It would not be all that surprising for Brock to basically be about to win the match. Shane comes down, each an F5 of Gabe, but then that gives Goldberg the opportunity to hit the spear, jackhammer, and get the win. I don't think that happens like that. I'm kind of in the same vein of Doug, as I think Brock wins to even out the score and Goldberg leaves. But if you're going to do distraction, I think Shane's the better choice. And then you could set up a Shane-Brock match for WrestleMania. Because then Brock could literally just kill Shane McMahon with suplexes all over.
Do you put that one in Hell in a Cell too, and just, you know, make an F5 off the top of the cage into the announcer's post?
I think F5 on top of the cage would be the best, yes.
That would be
pretty It would be the best, but I'm saying that, you know, Shane McMahon doesn't want to live anymore. Since he's already jumped off the top, why not throw him off the top this time?
There's worse ways to commit suicide.
No, pretty much suicide by Brock Lesnar is the worst way to die.
I thoroughly disagree with your statement.
All right. Hey, let's move to SmackDown because, I'm done talking about Goldberg. But SmackDown, the WWE title, of course, AJ Styles is your WWE champion, and he retains over Cena and Dean Ambrose. Aaron, did you think that this match was pretty good, though, that they had?
Yeah, I really liked the match a lot. I was at first really concerned because seeing that this was the main event that was going on first, Doug had mentioned, what if they do something where Cena wins and then AJ Styles rematches at the end of the night? And so the main event is really AJ Styles versus John Cena. And I was getting really upset because I thought that was going to happen. And I don't want Cena to have that record. But I thought it was stupid to have it. And I know why, because they were saying that the presidential debate was going on. And then the NFL, they had a game on. So they felt that they had really stiff competition. So they wanted to get people to watch with this really great opening match. And yes, it is an amazing match, but I felt that was a dumb thing to do. I felt that it was unnecessary for that to be the opening bout. But that aside, great match. AJ Styles really shows that he is incredibly versatile. He is an amazing wrestler. He does the heel persona so well, and he doesn't have to be that chicken crap heel. He doesn't have to be the, Rusev or the Sheamus type heel. He can be a heel. He can be just a jerk that is a great wrestler, but he cuts the corners, you know? And I think that that's been really great for SmackDown. And SmackDown has been more captivating to watch personally because you get to see John Cena, when he's on. But Dean Ambrose, I think, has been doing a much better job. And I also think that AJ Styles has been doing a much better job. So, kudos to them, and I really like this run. I think AJ, if he lost at Survivor Series, that'd be fine, but I would have this probably go until Royal Rumble, if not have him drop the title to somebody else at WrestleMania.
Now, Roger, were you a little upset when they said that it's WWE 2K17 is sponsoring No Mercy?
I definitely laughed. I mean, I think we all chuckled on that one. I actually disagree with Aaron a little bit on this one. I had no problem with the biggest match opening simply because of the outside factors they couldn't control, the presidential debate, the NFL. Like, they were going with stiff competition. What I disagree with was the match they chose at the main event. Randy Orton was not a main event caliber match. That's barely a main event caliber match for SmackDown without a feud. It should have been Ziggler-Miz by far. That had the story, that had the inclusion of Daniel Bryan, that had the feel-good moment. Like, that was the true main event of No Mercy, and that would have been fine. The IC Championship main eventing is a good thing, in my opinion. Everything about SmackDown seems to have a purpose, and that is what I appreciate about them. All of the superstars, whether even the Usos don't have, like, a current feud, but they have a mission. They're out to bust legs. They're out to prove that they're the best tag team. Alexa has a mission. Nikki has a mission. Carmella. All the superstars have purpose. That's something Raw desperately needs to copy.
I agree with what Roger said. I think the IC title did deserve to be the main event that night. It had the best storyline going into it. It had, I mean, it is a title for, and then you have that kind of, that aspect of, could this really be the swan song for Ziggler? It's the last match. It's the, you know, what way to better end it or even have a possibility of ending it with Ziggler walking away and that'd be the end of the pay-per-view. Is everybody singing na-na-na, na-na-na-na, hey-hey, bye-bye, Dolph Ziggler. And it was in Cleveland, I believe, too. So it was the hometown of both Dolph and Miz.
No, I thought I was in Richmond. Was it in Cleveland?
I don't remember.
There was, I think, a Raw, or maybe it was a SmackDown.
Okay.
But either way.
I thought I remembered one of them saying that he's going to be celebrating in Cleveland tonight. I guess I assumed that meant...
It was actually in Sacramento, California.
Okay.
Oh. All righty, then.
A little bit further
So not away. Even close to anything, yeah.
I mean, Richmond, Sacramento, you know, tomato, tomato.
Yeah.
Well, it's California. That's the hometown of the Miz, right?
Yeah. California is the hometown.
Yeah, hometown.
Yeah. We're just going to take it all. Just like Chicago is all of Illinois.
Exactly. So, right. Andy, let me ask you, though. Have you been enjoying the WWE title picture that they have been doing over at SmackDown?
The thing that I love about SmackDown is that I'll play it at like 1.5 speed, and I actually don't mind listening to it because Ronaldo does a great job of telling you what's going on in the ring, and like there'll be a couple times where he botches, which of course it goes on Botchamania, but I think that that's the best part about SmackDown, and the storytelling has been good. And yeah, they don't probably have as many matches, but I think everything's tight, and it's almost like, oh, if they had like 15 more minutes, they could have put this in it. But I think that's what makes you want to watch it, because if they say, hey, it's going to, you know, next week, this match is definitely going to happen, you're going to want to watch it then. But I think overall, Ward is doing a great job over there. Kudos to him, even with the WWE title, because I'm excited about it. Aaron, you bought a shirt, by the way, of this guy. What's his name again?
Is it AJ Styles?
James something? You bought his...
Oh, yeah, James Ellsworth.
Thank you.
No Chain Music?
Yeah, no Chain Music. Yes. And I know you're a big fan of him. You got a couple of his t-shirts. I was really happy that you did that.
Yeah,
I like use that coupon code.
What's that?
Did you finally use that coupon code?
Yeah, finally, I used it.
It's about dang time. Jeez.
Why does Ellsworth get bigger pops than Reigns?
Because he's booked better.
Which is a really sad statement.
I'm cool with him defeating AJ the way that he had. Like, I'm totally fine with that. Like, normally, that's an issue that you see, like, where somebody much lesser defeats a more established guy. But the way they did it made sense, and it was a perfect way to do it. And the storytelling that they did with James Ellsworth beating AJ Styles was good. Like, it didn't piss me off in the way that it might have when Roman Reigns was defeating AJ Styles, you know? This, I thought they did a great job with.
I think this is also great filler between pay-per-views since you have a little bit more time, especially with Survivor Series coming up. Even if you don't have a necessary Survivor Series match because you put AJ on one of the teams, so there is no title match, but I think this is great to filler for until you get a real contender for the belt.
And it's been fun, too. I think he's done a great job. I think it's the wrestler that made it better. So kudos to him on this. Kudos to the writing as well. I mean, just these guys have been doing a great job. I can't praise them enough. That's the funny thing. But Aaron, with the IC title, what's been going on with that? We discussed that Dolph should have been last, but do you like the way how he's transitioned and starting to defend it, or... What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I actually think that him and Miz have had a fantastic feud. I think Miz has been, especially this year in particular, has been like the bounce back, the comeback kid this year. Like him and other than Matt Hardy, without a question. But Miz for WWE has been fantastic in what he has done from the previous years to what he's doing now. And he really made the IC title feel special. And that's what you're supposed to do as a champion. You're supposed to make people go, wow, I want to see him. Why does he have that title? You know, and he was like, I'm going to break Honky Tonk's record. And it got to the point where we kind of felt that it was going to happen. But Dolph Ziggler has been doing a very good job. And even though these two have actually faced each other a ton of times for the IC title. They beat each other for the IC title multiple times throughout the years. That doesn't matter because they made this feud actually special. They made this feel like it was something unique. And if we're looking at the top feuds on Raw or on SmackDown, I mean, we're looking at AJ Styles and Ambrose and Cena mixed in there. And number two is Miz Ziggler. And you could even argue that might be even more important of a feud. But that aside, he's actually going to be taking on somebody from Raw at Survivor Series. They haven't announced who it is yet. Obviously, by the time Survivor Series comes out, we'll talk about that match a little bit more in detail. I kind of feel that's a little bit of a misnomer, though. This might be an opportunity where you would have him versus Miz in their final match, and then you move on to something completely different. But, you know, hopefully they do an open challenge or something along those lines where they can have Ziggler constantly defending the title and making it feel that much better.
You know, I just had an interesting thought. So SmackDown being 2 hours and they have a 3-hour pay-per-view. Raw, I think they just tested the fact that they are a 3-hour show and they almost went 4 hours with Raw talk. Aaron, do you think that's going to be the trend that Raw is going to start their pay-per-views being almost 4 hours long?
Less is more. And SmackDown is showing that. So I think that Raw talking smack is a supplement to SmackDown. If you want to see SmackDown, you only have to watch 2 hours a week. That's it. And if you want a little bit more, you can see Talking Smack. Same thing with like Walking Dead, for example. Walking Dead is a very popular show. It's an hour a week, and then they have a 30-minute after show where they talk about the episode a little bit more. I never watched Talking Dead because I don't have the time for it, and I also, you know, that's not my thing necessarily. But if I want to, I can watch that. And I think that Talking Smack is very similar. I can watch that if I want to, but I don't have to. With Raw, you have 3 hours. Or Survivor Series, which is 4 hours this year, you have all these extras in there, and not everyone has that much time. You know, we have lives, unfortunately, or fortunately, that we can't watch that stuff.
I mean, I would even argue, and this is the discussion we had back at SummerSlam / NXT Brooklyn, it's not 4 hours of captivating television. Like, if this were NXT TakeOver and it was 4 hours, I could probably watch it and be entertained. But WWE does not provide 4 hours of quality entertainment. SmackDown does a good job with 2 hours. NXT does a good job with an hour. That's it. And honestly, 3 hours, I watched the Hulu version and I think Raw drags. And that's 90 minutes. So that tells you how boring Raw is. And it's the same old stuff week after week after week.
Well, I think it's funny when you bring up Hulu, Raw is, like you said, 90 minutes. On Hulu, SmackDown is 80 minutes.
That's about right. It's usually an hour 20-ish. So, yeah, that's about right. But the thing is also, but SmackDown is I think I'm a broken record when I keep saying this. It's just tight. It's just, like, perfect. And you can tell that, like I said, that 15 minutes that they had, they can do something with it. But I think this is the time where they just don't. You just keep it the way it is. We don't change anything. I think actually have the pay-per-view 2.5 hours and then do, like, a 25-minute talking smack afterwards. I think that's perfect for SmackDown. And I think that's going to be the trend coming up here. So,
well, Raw started it, didn't they? Raw talk.
Yeah. Well, they did it just this time, but I believe that they were testing the waters out. But I'm sorry, but if you're, let's hypothetically saying you're watching everything live, you're watching from 6:30 until we'll say 10 when the show ends, and then they'll have 20 minutes, or I wouldn't be surprised if they go 40 minutes of, you know, Raw talk. So you could potentially sit in front of that TV for what, 4 hours? I mean, 4.5 hours.
Every
week. So that's a lot of time. I mean, I will say that I don't even rip the pre-shows anymore because I just don't care about. I do Talking Smack because. But I don't even bother with the Raw pre-show because who cares? And same thing with SmackDown. Yeah, same thing actually. I haven't downloaded any of them, but anyway. So Aaron, you have any thoughts on this?
No, just what I had already said, but. You know, I got to say, like, you know, if we're going to be comparing the Raw pay-per-view versus SmackDown, you know, No Mercy versus Hell in a Cell, I think No Mercy was a much better pay-per-view for the most part. You know, the Hell in a Cell, I would put the women's match and then the Universal title match would be the two that I would say you need to watch. But for, you know, No Mercy, we had, I think, much better matches in the triple threat and then also Ziggler-Miz. I felt that those two matches were really good. And even the Usos, Rhino and Slater match was really good. So I felt that they had a lot more going for it. And I'm going to be interested to see what they do for Survivor Series.
I agree. So let's thank our sponsor, HostGator. Are you a blogger, a podcaster, or are you just not happy with your web host? You need to check out HostGator.com. You're going to find web hosting made easy and affordable. HostGator offers unlimited space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click strip that solves with a free site builder and hands down the best control panel out there. Stop by today and try a free demo, see how easy it is. And if you use a special coupon code, off the mark, you're going to save 25% off your web hosting packages. So what do you got to lose? Check out HostGator.com and take a bite out of your web hosting costs. Make sure you check out, of course, Section 86's Off the Mark page and click on the banner at the top to stay big on items from WWEShop.com. All right, so let's talk about it, Aaron. Survivor Series, Raw versus SmackDown. The game or... Oh, yeah, it is Survivor Series.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
So they have announced 4 of the 5 Raw participants, but we have Jericho, Kevin Owens, Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman taking on Baron Corbin, Dean Ambrose, AJ Styles, Bray Wyatt, and Randy Orton. So even though we don't have all 5 of the Raw teams, 5 Raw people, does anybody see SmackDown winning here?
The overall?
For the 5-on-5 men's elimination.
Oh.
Yeah, I do. I see SmackDown winning.
Really? I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
So, all right. If you look at the SmackDown feuds, Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton are kind of united, right? We can say that they're on the same page. Now, granted, I think most of us expect Orton to stab him in the back eventually. But it wouldn't be all that surprising for him to sacrifice himself to save Bray in this match. If you look at Raw, they're clearly building up the continuation of the feud of Owens, Jericho, and Rollins. So coexisting is not going to happen, right? It wouldn't be surprising if they knock each other out, if Rollins walks out, if Owens and Jericho walk out. Like, I think there's a lot of different scenarios. And then it would make more sense for Owens to pull something like that, get on the bad side of Foley and Stephanie, and then they book them, you know, in a, I don't know, TLC match or Iron Man match against Rollins as some sort of punishment. But I think SmackDown wins 2 out of 3.
I agree. I wish SmackDown actually was in this. Or not SmackDown, but NXT. My bad. NXT
so
should
you,
be in
this. Andy, you think that you have SmackDown winning this as well?
I have SmackDown winning this, yes.
All right. Interesting.
I was going to say, I could see it possibly happening too, because if you have Bray Wyatt on the team and Braun Strowman is the other guy also on the Raw team, does he do a big show and he flips, or not necessarily flip side, because he is still technically, I guess, a heel? But he helps out his old Wyatt family and knocks out a couple of his own players and walks off like the Big Show.
Especially if Sami Zayn's the fifth guy.
I guess that could happen. I guess we could see that. I personally, if I were to pick today, I'm picking Team Raw versus SmackDown for the men. Now for the women, we have Nia Jax, Charlotte, Bayley, and then 2 to be announced. I'm assuming one of them will be Dana Brooke. It'll be one of the 3, Dana Brooke, Sasha, or what's her face that's returning? Emma.
Emma?
I'm assuming Emma will be there, and then it'll be between the other 2. For SmackDown, we have Carmella, Becky, Nikki, Alexa, and Naomi. So the question here is, Roger, who do you have, Raw or SmackDown? Early reports.
Well, I would probably say this is the one where SmackDown wins again. I think Sasha and Dana Brooke will be on this, so I think you'll have a bit of a split between the horsewomen. I'm including Nia Jax as part of the horsewomen. And then you have Sasha and Bayley, so they won't be on the same page. Now, granted, I think Carmella is going to attack Nikki Bella, the team captain, which is stupid because your team captain should logically be your women's champion, but whatever. Yeah, no, I have the Charlotte team going down. I wouldn't be surprised if Charlotte's protected and doesn't need a pinfall. I wouldn't be surprised if Nia Jax is disqualified for, you know, powerbombing Naomi through a table because she could take a spot like that. But I go with the SmackDown ladies here.
I actually agree. I think they'll win. I think Team SmackDown for the women's match, yes, definitely.
I would pick SmackDown as well. And Doug, are you on board with SmackDown?
I will go Team Raw for... Well, hold on, wait. Nikki Bella is on Team SmackDown. Oh, yeah, SmackDown, never mind.
Super Cena applies to girlfriends.
It's got to be Nikki Bella is going to get the final win or whatever, because, you know, you got to promote Total Divas and their shell. Yeah.
Who's John Cena gonna face in Survivor Series? At Survivor Series.
Well, he's dressing up as Nikki Bella, so he's gonna be in the women's match.
By the way, that was the funniest picture ever. They'll have a
SmackDown match or something. But
is he identifying as Nikki Bella?
Well, he does peep going sitting down. So
we've all been there. We have then we have the 10-on-10 tag team match of Raw versus SmackDown. Obviously, New Day is going to be on there for Raw, and then SmackDown. It's the usual suspects. I'm not going to list everybody off, but New Day has been so popular. Are we going to have New Day also get a win here, or is this where SmackDown gets a win?
I have Raw. For one, despite the fact that I can't actually name five tag teams on Raw, New Day, Club, Certified G's, Shining Stars,
Golden Truth.
Are they on Raw?
They are.
Then that's your fifth, I guess. Like, this should be 4-on-4. Like, you don't need 10. I don't know why they're doing that.
Well, who are your tag teams on SmackDown?
I think that would have been a good opportunity there. But 10-on-10 is going to seem weird to have that many people. Like, that's... Like, how are you going to do that? And is it going to be single elimination? Or if one person gets eliminated, both people are? How are they going to do that?
We're going to see 40-second eliminations, obviously. I mean, you've got to get 19 eliminations or 18 at least. So, most people are going to get pinned within 40 to 45 seconds.
Yeah, so that's going to be Survivor Series this year. Do you think that it's going to be any good, Andy? It's going to 4 hours. Obviously, we already have 5 matches that they already are talking about. The other two being Lesnar, Goldberg, and then, of course, Ziggler taking on a member of Raw. I assume that we'll probably see Cena in a match here and maybe we'll have another one from Raw showing up. Do you think that Survivor Series is going to be any good?
I actually don't think this one's going to be good, but I think TLC will be really good. But for some reason, this doesn't feel right. There's something weird about it. It's almost like, this is how I can explain it. SmackDown, they're already talking about TLC. So it's almost like they're not even looking. They're looking at this pay-per-view as kind of like, oh, we're going to glance over it because in 2 weeks we have TLC. So I don't.
Well, but TLC is a SmackDown only pay-per-view. One of the reasons why, probably.
I think they're still looking. I mean, I guess that's yes. I don't even know how to. I'm trying to think how to explain it. But yeah, it's almost like they're still going to. This is just a thing for. It's a stepping stone or whatever before they hit their pay-per-view in 2 weeks. So I think it's going to be good. I'll just leave it at that.
All right, Roger, what about you?
I would think this could be better. I don't think it's going to be as bad as last year. But I don't think it's going to be a great show. One of the things that bothers me is that they always like to do these Raw versus SmackDown, but nothing's ever on the line besides this stupid concept of brand superiority. Like, why not say that, like, hey, I challenge you to these 3 matches and the winner gets the WrestleMania main event? Like, put something of value on the line so that you can understand why these teams would work together to say, hey, I can't stand you, but I want the opportunity to be in the main event at WrestleMania. So they have Owens says, like, you know what? I'm so selfish that I would cost myself the opportunity just so I can pop up Powerbomb Rollins. Like, put some stakes behind it, because Brock Lesnar Goldberg has more stakes than this stupid Survivor Series mini tournament, which I would prefer a Survivor Series tournament, like the Ultimate Survivor they did, 15 years ago. So, I don't know, I think this is going to be formulaic and disappointing.
They might do it. They only have 5 matches announced, and there's going to be about 7, but they're going to have to fill, 4 hours. That would be interesting if they did, where they actually brought everyone back from Raw and SmackDown so they have a clear winner. That's something that could happen, which would be really cool, but they probably won't. Of that.
And Doug, what about you?
I think this is going to be a big hyped pay-per-view that's going to show very little in return. Just because, like everybody was saying it during the Survivor Series matches, somebody's going to betray somebody else, and it's going to feel more about establishing yourself on your own show rather than the brand split superiority. So you're going to have that problem of, I would rather see Survivor Series matches of people on SmackDown versus people on SmackDown. One match of SmackDown versus SmackDown, one match of Raw versus Raw, and maybe one match of Raw versus SmackDown. But we're not going to get that. So we'll see. I think it's going to be a lot of hype, a lot of potential, but it's going to fall flat.
Yeah, and I echo a lot of your guys' thoughts, and I would say, Doug, I think you probably have the best idea there, where you do have a Raw a SmackDown and then a joint venture. The women's match, I'm okay with that, but I really don't want to see the tag team one because there's just way too many people involved in that, and I don't think that it will be good. And just as, you know, it's filler. You know, to have 20 people in a match is not, it's not the Royal Rumble. And I agree with you, Roger, too, about having something on the line, not just brand superiority. You have to have something there that really resonates with the fans that say, this is something I have to see because they are, you know, if some such and such wins, they get X. And, you know, with the bragging rights pay-per-view, they had a stupid trophy. It was dumb. You know, it didn't make any sense. You have to have something of value where you can say, okay, you know, we have where you get the main event of WrestleMania this year, or, you know, at Royal Rumble, SmackDown gets the last two people, you know, or the people that survive in the men's, they're the final four or final five people or whatever it is, you know, the final two people, even, you know, they're number 29 and number 30 entrant in the Royal Rumble. Even though it is a little contrived, it can still be something where people are like, I need to stay in. And you could have that heel that stays on the outside the entire match because he wants to be the 29th entrant or the 30th entrant. He doesn't want to be eliminated, you know? So he's like, I'm going to stay on the outside. Please don't tag me in. You know, you could have something like that, and that would be really cool. That would make it, you know, monumental. But I think that I think Survivor Series is going to be an okay pay-per-view. I think that it will the Goldberg-Lesnar match is going to disappoint. But I think that the men's five-on-five could be pretty good. And even the SmackDown one, a female one, could be pretty decent, too.
All right. So any last words you have, Doug?
Nothing. I think this really shows, especially with the cruiserweight stuff, that they should have done cruiserweight to SmackDown. That way it could focus on the wrestling, not a storyline. Move all the women to Raw, let them be a focus line because they are a show, although the wrestling is getting superiorly better. Let all the women be on Raw, and that way you could have done Survivor Series women's match all on Raw. That'd be the Raw one. You could do a tag teams with everybody on SmackDown, and then you have the 5-on-5 regular, your top five SmackDown stars versus the top five Raw stars, and you could have a face versus heel, whatever way you want to put it.
You could also do the same thing with cruiserweights, have them in a Survivor Series style match.
Yeah.
Roger, any last thoughts?
Let's hope Survivor Series doesn't disappoint like last year. Truthfully, you know, as negative as I'm sure we sound sometimes, I think all of us share the belief that we'd rather the show be good. It's yes. Just, you know, we kind of know better. So let's hope that they figure out something intelligent for Survivor Series. And if not, I'll just look forward to TLC.
Yeah. And Aaron, last words. You're good. All right. I got nothing else to add. I'm just looking forward to basically these next 3 weeks of wrestling. So anyway, so that's all the time we have for this month's show. If you're into the Twitter, you can follow the show at AwfulMark86. I want to thank 86 Productions for hosting and editing the podcast. And I want to thank all of our listeners for taking the time to download and listen to the show. And for Doug Hahn, Roger Cave, and Aaron Hughes, I'm Andrew Hughes. And until next time, see you in the ring.